bird who does not eat the fruits of the tree is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who by his omniscience perfectly understands his own position and that of the conditioned living entity represented by the eating bird. That living entity, on the other hand, does not understand himself or the Lord. He is covered by ignorance and is thus called eternally conditioned, whereas the Personality of Godhead, being full of perfect knowledge, is eternally liberated. Could someone read the purport?
External potency, Mahamaya. Within the material world there is vidya, or material science, and avidya, or material ignorance. But in this verse, vidya means the internal spiritual knowledge by which the Personality of Godhead is fixed in omniscience. The example of two birds in a tree, which is given in many Vedic literatures, demonstrates the statement, nityo nityanam. There are two categories of eternal living entities, namely the Supreme Lord and the minute jiva soul. The conditioned jiva soul, forgetting his identity as an eternal servant of the Lord, tries to enjoy the fruits of his own activities and thus comes under the spell of ignorance. This bondage of ignorance has existed since time immemorial and can be rectified only by one's taking to the loving devotional service of the Lord, which is full of spiritual knowledge. In conditioned life, the living entity is forced by the laws of nature to engage in pious and impious fruitive activities. But the liberated position of every living entity is to offer the fruits of his work to the Lord, the Supreme Enjoyer. It should be understood that even when the living entity is in a liberated condition, his knowledge is never equal in quantity to that of the Personality of Godhead. Even Lord Brahma, the Supreme Living Entity within this universe, requires only partial knowledge of the Personality of Godhead and his potencies. In Bhagavad Gita 4.5, the Lord explains his superior knowledge to Arjuna. Bahuni me vyati tani mani tavacharjuna tanya ham vidasarvani natvam vidha varantava. The Blessed Lord said, many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy. The term bandha, or bound, is also understood to refer to the living entity's eternal dependence upon the Lord, either in the conditioned or liberated state. In the kingdom of Maya, the living entity is bound to the cruel laws of birth and death, whereas in the spiritual sky, the living entity is fixed in a bond of love to the Lord. Liberation means freedom from the miseries of life, but never freedom from one's loving relationship with Lord Krishna, which is the essence of one's eternal existence. According to Srila Madhvacharya, the Lord is the only eternally free living entity, and all other living entities are eternally dependent and bound to the Lord, either through blissful loving service or through the bondage of Maya. The conditioned soul should give up tasting the bitter fruits of the tree of material existence and turn to his dearmost friend, Lord Krishna, who is sitting within his heart. There is no pleasure equal to or greater than the pleasure of pure devotional service to Lord Krishna. And by tasting the fruit of love of Krishna, the liberated living entity enters the ocean of happiness.
So there are two types of living entities, the Nityanam, the eternal living entities that are plural in number, and Nitya, the one who is also eternal, but that one contains all the others. Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitanam, Eko Bahunam Vidyatikama. That one Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Master, Ekale Ishvara Krishna, Arasabha Bhritya, and everyone else's servant. He maintains all the other living entities, even though they have qualities similar to his, as he is eternal, as he is Chaitana, or conscious, they're also eternal, they're also conscious, but the difference is they're very small, infinitesimal, and he is Vibhu, he's great, and they're Anu, very small. That's the difference. The living entities have same or almost the same qualities of the Lord. This is described by Śrīla Rūpa Goswāmī in the Nectar of Devotion. That the living entities have 78%. That's a comparative analysis based on 64 qualities of the Lord that Śrīla Rūpa Goswāmī pointed out. Actually, the Lord has unlimited qualities, but 64 have been enumerated, and of those 64, Śrīla Rūpa Goswāmī has pointed out that Narayan has 60 of those qualities, Lord Shiva has 55 of those qualities, and the living entities, like Brahma and all the other jivas in this material, have 50 of those qualities. So it comes out 78%. But even though Brahma has 78%, and Brahma uses his qualities in the service of the Lord, still, there's no comparison. It's simply to compare Brahma to Lord Krishna is offensive. Sapashandi bhavet. One who compares even Brahma or Shiva to Lord Narayan or Lord Krishna is making an offense. Because really, it's not just that that's some kind of an imposed etiquette, but it really is offensive. It's ridiculous, because Brahma, he has his hands full, so to speak, trying to create and manage one universe. But how many universes are there? Would anyone like to say how many universes are there?
Well, it's compared to, it says like a universe is like a mustard seed, a bag of mustard seeds, as a comparison. It's hard to say exactly.
Yeah, even that's an underestimate, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you took a whole big basket of mustard seeds, any cooks here? You know how big a mustard seed is? Very small. So how many mustard seeds are in a big bag? Mathematicians here? Billions, maybe? Billions of mustard seeds in a big, huge bag. So that's to give a general idea of how many yasyaika nishvasita kala matava lambya jivanti loma vilaja jagadandanata. So jagadandanata. He has so many millions of universes, and the Lord is effortlessly manifesting them and annihilating them, and then remanifesting them. And poor Brahma, he has to work very hard. He has to deal with so many difficulties. He has to meditate. He has to go through meditation for 100 years by the calculation of the demigods in order to get the inspiration to create, to know how to do it. But we never hear of Krishna having to meditate to figure out how to manifest or expand universes. He simply breathes out, exhales, and they come into being, and then he inhales and they're annihilated. And even that is not Krishna himself. That's an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of Krishna. So Krishna himself, we don't see him even worrying about maintaining universes and annihilating them. He simply plays on his flute and enjoys his pastimes with his associates. That's his unique position. He has nothing to do. When he acts, when he does something, it's not that he's forced to do it by modes of nature or even by duty. He has no duty. Because if you say duty, then it means somebody has imposed a duty on you. This is your duty. Who says? Well, humanity says, or your nation, it's your national duty, or it's your family duty, or whatever, moral duty. But Krishna has no morals that imposed upon him, no nations, no humanity, no one. He's simply Swarat, completely independent. He does whatever he likes. But whatever he does happens to be perfect. Even if he does something that appears to be immoral, it's not immoral. It's only our faulty vision that we think that it's immoral. Actually, it's the perfection of morality. If he kills someone, first of all, he doesn't actually kill anyone because the soul is aja. Aja nityam, ajo nityam shashvatoyam purana nahanyate hanyamane sharira. The soul is never killed. Krishna says that. So he wouldn't contradict himself by saying the soul is never killed and then kill the soul. He doesn't kill the soul, and he doesn't kill the body, because the body never was alive, so it can't be killed. All he does is he transfers the soul, if he chooses, he transfers them into another situation when Krishna does that. But when he does that, it's full of kindness. He purifies that soul so completely that that soul is now eligible to enter into the spiritual world. Therefore, how is there anything wrong with that? What's immoral about that? Is there anything immoral about purifying someone from... They would have had to go to hell and suffer, you know, untold period of time in the hellish planets. We're hearing about the Yamadutas today. So they would have to go there and suffer. And then after that, take birth in some abominable species of life, like a worm. And then after living through that worm body, then another body, a germ, and etc., etc. So Krishna, in one moment, liberates one from all the suffering that he would have been entitled to suffer. Therefore, how is it immoral? It's the highest morality. Everything that Krishna does, when he steals butter from others' houses, everyone appreciates it. Even those whose butter is stolen, they're so happy, they're in ecstasy that the Lord has, and he, Krishna goes in, and when the other children are there, if there's no butter or yogurt to steal, then he pinches the babies so they cry, and then he passes urine on the floor to show his he didn't appreciate that there was no butter and yogurt there. So even that, you may say, well, that's too much. No, that's immoral. I'm pinching babies. You're not supposed to pinch babies. But when Krishna pinches the baby, it's also perfectly moral. It's the ideal use of that baby to be pinched by Krishna. So Krishna could use him in that wonderful way. Everything Krishna does is moral. There's no question of him doing anything wrong. What about a tsunami? Today I was chanting japa and I saw a tsunami route, evacuation route. So that means sometimes they're worried that maybe some tsunamis.
Here. Oh, yeah?
Yes. So
first the earthquake, then the tsunami.
Yeah. So, but if the tsunami comes, then, well, who sent the tsunami? It must have been God, because he's the controller. So if God sends a tsunami, he must be immoral, because so many innocent people will be harmed. And that's a bad thing. So God is bad. Right? He's immoral. Well, then how do you justify a tsunami? You have a justification.
Well, there's a lot of... it brings people together in one way.
Brings people together.
But it also gets rid of bad people.
Gets rid of bad people. What about the good people that it gets rid of?
Well, assumably they're... maybe they'll get a better situation.
Like he was, like Alex was saying, maybe just they'll move on into a better life. You're saying, like, you're talking about Krishna has the choice to, you know.
But what if they had a great life? And you were snapped out of it?
Yeah, well, he's making a good point, actually.
But if we're, like, here in a material world, then isn't there a place that can be better than a material world?
Yes.
So
yeah.
Even if
good point.
You have a great life, you can technically have a better life on a spiritual plane versus a material plane.
Yes. So, good philosophy. In other words, the Lord is making a better arrangement for every soul, even through that tsunami. It may seem that, well, like Bhadri Narayan Prabhu said, he's... How can you be better? He's sitting on the beach enjoying himself, drinking a beer. How can anything be better than that?
With John Brown's girlfriend.
And they both get washed away. And so how could God do that? Take away their pleasure just in the midst of it. And they had big plans for that evening as well. So, no, actually, that particular situation that they were in was not a very good situation because they're in the material world. But even if you say it was a good situation, then they will get in their next life another opportunity to continue. A better situation. Even if someone is ripped away from a sinful life, then that will be good for him because he'll be punished and then rectified. Just like prison. Is prison good or bad for society? Now, if you ask the prisoners, if you took a vote amongst the prisoners, there'd probably be an overwhelming, vote that the prisons were bad. But if you ask a vote of the people outside the prison, what do you think of prisons? They all say, very good. They're very happy about those prisons. Because it protects the innocent and it rectifies the guilty. It makes them improve. So the material world is good. The system of karma is good. You can't say there's anything immoral about the karma system. I remember I was speaking with someone who was saying, well, if I were God, I wouldn't arrange it that people had to suffer at all. I would just make it so that everybody became completely pure devotees and everything. You know, they all got to go to the spiritual world. But if you take away, if you say everyone has to go to the spiritual world, then you've taken away free will. And not everyone wants their free will taken away from them. In fact, if you ask practically every soul, would you like to be forced into a position of bliss? Or would you like to be forced to go to the spiritual world and you can't come back again? They would probably say no. I hold dear my individuality, my free choice, so much that I would like to withhold the choice for myself. If I want to go to the spiritual world, if I want to serve Krishna, if I want to be blissful, I'll choose, but not that it's forced upon me. So Krishna, or God, He very kindly arranges that. He gives them their independence, and He gives them their free will. You can't come up with a better system. You say, well, everyone has to go back to the spiritual world. But for some people, even for yourself, if you were told you have to go to the spiritual world and you can't leave, you might say, well, I don't know if I want that. That I can't leave. I would like to be able to leave if I so desire. Therefore, the Lord's arrangement is perfect in every aspect. He gives the one free will, he chooses his own, and then he takes the consequences himself. But as soon as he has a desire to get free from that, and he calls upon the Lord, Hey Krishna, Hey Govinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Then the Lord comes on the back of Garuda and pulls him out of the ocean of material suffering. And that's a perfect system. Everyone gets what they want. Yayatamam prapadyate, tanks to taiva bhajamiham. As they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. Some don't want to surrender to Krishna. So that would be really painful for them to be forced into surrendering when they didn't want to. But this way, the Lord makes it perfect for them. They can go on not surrendering to the Lord for eternity. And they're very happy not surrendering to the Lord and being punished. That's the type of happiness also. What is it? Sadism? Masochism? Likes to suffer. Likes to cause himself misery. So there's people who are, in fact, there's many of them here in the material world. They prefer to just go on suffering birth after birth after birth. And even if you tell them, you know, that you're going to have to take birth again and going to have to suffer, I don't care if I become a dog. I don't care if in my next life I become.
I can become a squirrel.
I hadn't heard that one.
Yep, I've heard it.
That should.
So, are there any questions?
Oh, actually, I was going to add something to, it's not a question.
Okay, go ahead.
Some time ago, it was some years ago, I watched a documentary on one of the German concentration camps where they packed all the Jews with the intent of incinerating them. And scenes were just so horrific, my mind went numb. And I remember this question coming to my mind, how is this just? You know, but it's perfectly just. I mean, it might be controversial, but you know, we think that we have the right to incinerate alive so many animals, so many times every week, you know. And when we get a little bit burned, then we think that's not just. It's just, that's a mind-numbing hypocrisy. You know, we have the right to, by force, take over the possession of a body of another living entity and force upon the living entity so much, excruciating pain without, and then thinking not just to get all that pain back, actually just a token of it.
Yes. Slaughterhouses produce wars and so many things.
Of course, I agree with that, because I just heard Prabhupada say the exact same thing, that there'll always be some war, because their wholesale killing, he was talking about slaughterhouses, they will also be slaughtered. But what if someone were to say, hey man, my grandmother was a vegetarian. My Polish grandmother hauled off out of the ghetto. She was a vegetarian. Tell me, she was baked because of this? How dare you?
Karma is not so easy to understand. It's a very subtle science. And as we were discussing earlier about the tsunami, it's not that necessarily everyone is bad who was affected by the tsunami. There were some good people who were also affected, but their effect by the tsunami was not in a bad way, but in a good way. For example, the mouth of the kitten is, the mouth of the cat is sometimes used to give this example, that the mouth of the cat, when it's felt by a mouse, is the death knell. It's a grip of death. But when the kitten is in the mouth of the cat, it feels motherly affection. So death, which we think is always bad, is not always bad. Death can be the most wonderful thing in the world for one who's ready and who's graduated from the material world. They graduate back to the spiritual world.
And I would offer even this. We don't know what experience those people have, and we don't know what the cumulative set of those experiences are. Just like Mr. Prakash, all the relatives, oh, he had this, the man I was talking about this morning, he had this cerebral thrombosis, he's in the hospital, he's really been through the ringer. But what was the conclusion that he came to? The conclusion that he came to is a fantastic conclusion. I should just surrender wholesale to Krishna.
And if he surrenders to Krishna, then all suffering forever and ever will be finished. There'll be no more suffering he'll ever have to experience, not even, you know, a little pinprick.
So we don't know what, as you were saying, karma is very complicated. And we don't know by, and we may not even see the result in that experience. It may not, I mean, there were some people who went to concentration camps and were gassed. I mean, as long as we're talking about the most horrific, this is a horrific example they always give. There were some people who actually, it became a spiritual experience for them and they actually surrendered, okay. But there were a lot of people who didn't happen like that, who were, you know, terrified and bitter. But we don't know what their consciousness was, where Krishna's putting them in the next situation. They may have to go through 3 or 4 lives to come to the right point. And if that's what they have to go through, we can't see the whole scale. We're just seeing a slice.
Yeah, we can't judge. We're only seeing, it's like a person, I think you nicely put it. It is a difficult thing for people to understand. Just one example of that was a few years ago, there was in the UK, one of the top soccer players died at a very young age. And the whole country was in mourning practically, you know, because they live for soccer. And so it just so happened that they were asking the coach what he thought about it, some interviewer. And he said, it's his karma. Because he said that, there was a national outcry. They fired him. He was criticized by the whole country. Jeez. That how he could be so insensitive to say something like that, that it was due to his own former activity. So you can see, we're dealing with a lot of prejudice here, a lot of ignorance that's difficult to overcome.
There's
one... Oh. I'll go you first, and then...
There's one more aspect to the whole picture. I just remembered in the Gita, Krishna gives this example. He says that when it comes to creation, I am the cause. The creation of the facilities, of the environment, I am the cause. But when it comes to the happiness and the stress of the living entity is said to be the cause. In other words...
Nature is the cause of...
Correct,
the,
yeah, first. Nature is the cause. But, you know, it's indirectly Krishna, yeah? So... to illustrate this example is just like, I mean, East LA is created the way it is. It's a nasty place. And if I go there, I mean, I should know that if I go there, you know, I'm to expect trouble. And I did. I expected trouble and I tried to go out there to distribute books and I did get in trouble, barely made it out of there. It's East LA. What do you expect? So same thing, you know, when you put your foot in the material world, you're going to get smelly.
Wow. Question on a different topic, the idea of free will and individuality, because we could be individuals if we did not have free will. So if we're Krishna's eternally separated parts and parcels, it just seems to me we have to have free will. There's no way to be separate from Krishna without free will.
Yes, that's correct. We have to have free will. He arranged it.
I just wonder about how if everyone was killed and purified and just went back to the spiritual world, then that would be taken away their free will. But Krishna kills some people and does that to them. He purifies them and they're eligible for
But they wanted it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It may appear that he's sending Shishupal to the Brahma Jyoti, but actually Shishupal wanted that. And in some other scriptures, there may be some descriptions that make it a little easier to understand that. They had performed a lot of pious activities. For example, in the Garga Samhita, it describes that Putana, in her previous life, was the daughter of Bali Maharaj. And when she saw the beautiful Vamandev, the personality of Godhead, she was overwhelmed with a motherly affection. Oh, I wish I had a child so beautiful like that. But then when Bali Maharaj was arrested and punished by the same Vamadev, she thought, I want to kill that person. So she got the next opportunity in her life to become Putana, where she could have motherly affection to the Lord and also want to kill him at the same time. But the Lord was so kind, he took the bright side. He purified her of her bad desire and just took her positive side, that she wanted to have motherly affection towards the Lord, and then she got to go back to Goloka Vrindavan and become a mother or nurse of Lord Krishna. So that was her.
See how expert Krishna is. Far beyond our possible imagination.
He kept everything intact. She wanted to try to kill him. Krishna said, yes, you want to kill me? Go ahead, try. Put the poison on your breast and see if it works. Okay.
My question was related to, you were speaking about Brahma, and you were saying that you were relating it to Krishna about the characteristics, like there was 50 characteristics out of 64 that Brahma had, and then you said that it was like 100 years before he could manifest anything through a meditation.
100 years of the demigods, yeah, celestial years.
So he has to go through like a whole process of meditation versus where Krishna just like flows off of his fingertips or through his breath, essentially.
Yes. That's the difference between God and the living entities.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Yes.
What is